Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the wonderful world of the National Football League for BleacherReport.com, Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, SportsOnEarth.com, and TheSportsDaily.com. I'm joined, of course, by my co-host, Brian.
What is going on, Andrea?
Absolutely nothing is going on in the world of the National Football League. Oh, wait. Just kidding.
At least not for
24 hours. Yeah. 24 hours, or give or take a few minutes from now on Thursday, September 10th, the Pittsburgh Steelers will be facing the New England Patriots in the 2015 NFL season kickoff.
Yes.
Which means...
It's back.
It's officially football season. Teams reduce their rosters to 53 players on Saturday, establish their practice squads on Sunday, have been making transactions and moves on the bottom of their rosters in particular over the past few days, getting everything set for week one action. It's exciting, and that also means our minute picks will be back later in the show.
All right.
Get to start talking about some actual football games about to be played. But before we get to that, there's a few little bit of league business, let's say, that we will first have to address.
Sure.
Let's start with the Cleveland Browns.
Why not?
So the Cleveland Browns, they drafted a running back by the name of Terrence West in the 2014 draft in round three. He was their leading rusher in the 2014 season. Was splitting carries, of course, with Isaiah Crowell. Crowell ended up with fewer yards, but more yards per carries and more touchdowns. But that's not really the issue. The issue is that the Browns coaching staff has had problems with basically, we'll call it Terrence West's on-field and off-field behavior. Not necessarily the way he plays the game, but who he kind of is as a person and what he does and how he behaves.
Mm-hmm.
This has been something that's frustrated them for some time, his preparation, his maturity, you know, issues that, of course, we could ascribe to, let's say, someone like Johnny Manziel. But unlike Johnny Manziel, Terrence West hasn't really been taking a proactive approach, let's say, to you know, fixing these issues.
He's just being him.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. But the Browns brass have been kind of uncomfortable with him over the span of time. And basically, they keep trying to pound into him, you know, get this right. He's just not getting it. He's kind of hyper-competitive. He rubs other players the wrong way. Just, you know, not the greatest of teammates. So there have been rumblings going on for quite some time that there was a potential possibility that the Browns were exploring to move Terrence West, whether to release him outright or to trade him to another team. And that, in fact, came to pass on Sunday. Terrence West traded to the Tennessee Titans for a conditional seventh rounder. So the Browns, if you take a look at some of their recent drafts...
Not to pile on right before the season starts.
Well, and I'm not going to bring in things like Brandon Whedon and Trent Richardson and stuff like that, because those are guys drafted not by this administration,
not these coaches, not this GM. Just looking at what they've done.
Just looking at what this group has done. So, and that means let's look at last year's draft. Justin Gilbert, taken in the first round, cornerback. Off the field issues, on the field, kind of a liability. I don't know if we'll see him play this year. There's a lot of cornerbacks ahead of him on the depth chart right now, and until he gets his mind right, I don't know if he's going to be able to get his play right.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, of course, also taken in the first round last year, Johnny Manziel. We've already discussed that he's had off the field problems. Once he's addressing, he's working on becoming a better quarterback, but again, early returns haven't been as promising as you'd hope. Second round draft pick last year, left guard Joel Bitonio, one of the best in the league. So
good pick there.
That worked. But then you go to round three, and then you got that Terrence West pick. You know, and a lot of people are even faulting the Browns for the Cam Irving selection later in round one of the 2015 draft, because A, he didn't end up winning the right guard job like they thought he would. B, he's better suited to play center or maybe even tackle rather than guard, which is something he didn't really do a lot before this. So why are you drafting a center to play guard and then you don't even start
in
him?
In the first round. Yeah.
So the Browns, this particular Browns administration, and not completely unrightfully so, have taken some heat for their draft choices. I mean, and even when you look at the rest of their picks this year, you know, a lot of guys that are hurt, you know, other guys who didn't make the team. Vince Maley, their fourth-round draft pick this year, wide receiver, cut, Not even kept, not even retained for the practice squad. He's now on the Dallas Cowboys practice squad. So that's another potential. That's another swing and a miss.
So that's four of the first five picks they had this year. Or did they have two?
Over the past two years.
Did they have three? Oh, I'm sorry. Over the past two years.
They took Vince Mailey this year.
Right.
So not promising returns. Though, you know, you do have to commend the Browns for being able to, maybe they didn't draft well, but they identified that these guys maybe don't fit their scheme, maybe don't fit their culture, maybe don't fit their locker room, and it decided to cut bait fairly quickly and move on. But why don't you make the right decisions to begin with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you...
I mean, how do you end up?
They seem to have done well with the Shelton pick.
Danny Shelton pick looks great.
He looks like he's going to work
out.
Like I said last year, Betonio's pick has
been really good. Duke Johnson. They want him to be a big part of their offense. He just came off of the concussion protocol. He's cleared to play this week. We'll start to see, you know, how they want to work him in as both a running back and a receiver. Xavier Cooper drafted in the third round this year. He had one of the highest preseason sack totals in the NFL. He's got a lot of promise to help out.
So it's not like they're
that run game
in
the pass, run defense and pass rush.
It's not that they're completely missing here.
There's some conspicuous misses.
There's been more misses than you should, considering the number of picks that they've had early over the past few years.
Correct. And that's just something to keep an eye on. Granted that the Mike Pettine and more importantly Ray Farmer. Eras, if they do continue in 2016.
Assuming they continue.
Ray Farmer, right now, should be noted, on a four-game suspension to start the season because of text, quote, gate, quote, which is a hotel in D.C.
I still don't understand why the GM can't text people on the sideline, but that's...
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, anyway.
So much gate. In other news...
Gate or none, you know.
In other news, Jason Pierre-Paul finally... met with the New York Giants on Monday for the first time this year, and most notably for the first time since blowing off one of his fingers in a fireworks accident on the 4th of July weekend. He was going to come in, meet with the team doctors, hopefully get cleared, maybe sign a contract, sign the franchise tag, but the team doctors will not clear him just yet. They sent him back to Florida where he's working out by himself. So basically... what happened was on Saturday, September 5th, when all the teams had to make their 53-man rosters official, that's also when they had to do things like put guys on the PUP list, put guys on non-football injury lists, put people on IR recall. With Jason Pierre-Paul meeting with them after that deadline, that is not an option. But, of course, the Giants weren't particularly interested in that option because that means that Jason Pierre-Paul's franchise tender, which is worth $14.8 million this year, would be fully paid to him regardless of how long he ends up sitting on these lists. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want to go, so he couldn't go on the they signed him. Well, no, sorry. If he went on NFI, then he wouldn't get paid. If he was on PUP or, sorry, injured reserve, he would get paid. So obviously, they don't want to put him in injured reserve and pay him. Jason Pierre-Paul doesn't want to be on the NFI list and not get paid. So basically, now he's working out by himself in Florida. And then when he returns to the Giants the next time, and they keep examining him, then they will clear him. Then he will sign the franchise tag, which will be prorated based on how many number of games that he missed. So you take $14.8 million, divide it by 17, and then that number is how much he'll lose per week.
Until he comes back.
And that's not good news because Jason Pierre-Paul, maybe, missing a finger and all of this, they kind of need him in that defensive front. So the standoff essentially continues, but... hindsight 2020 and everything, maybe when they franchise tagged him back in the spring, Pierre-Paul shouldn't have gotten so upset about not getting a long-term contract, signed the thing already, and not had to deal. And then, even if he blew off his hand or his finger again, like if that ended up being what happened after that, he'd have that franchise tag. But they could, of course, put him on NFI at that point, and he wouldn't get paid. So
at least they didn't go there with it. So
at least that didn't happen for him. But now, the stalemate continues. Another stalemate/standoff continuing is Seattle Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor. He has been holding out in hopes of getting a new contract. He said that he will hold out into the regular season if need be, if he doesn't get that deal. And that appears to be the case. He is not reported to the team as of today, as of Wednesday, which doesn't bode well for him reporting tomorrow on Thursday, which therefore means he's not playing. And the Seahawks have been preparing as though he's not going to be there. And
they're just pretending he's hurt, right?
They're basically assuming they're treating him like he's hurt.
Right.
In the sense of we're just going to prepare without him, next man up. How long this standoff continues, we'll have to wait and see. I guess one thing I guess would hinge on is if the Seahawks secondary somehow looks pretty bad without Cam Chancellor, something that might be able to get the Seahawks, you know, to persuade them to pursue a long-term deal with Chancellor.
Or hurry up and get something figured out.
Or maybe the secondary handles things just fine without Cam Chancellor.
And he loses his leverage.
And he loses his leverage, so maybe he has to come back because suddenly he might, you know, get jumped on the depth chart once he does return.
So it all comes down to Nick Foles.
And how how well he can throw against that Seattle defense on Sunday that might determine the next chapter in this Chancellor Seahawks standoff. Other news of note, of course, we got injury reports rolling in preparation for this week's game. Nothing too notable on Wednesday's reports for games that are taking place on Sunday and Monday. We'll have to see what the practice reports on Thursday are for the statuses on those guys or for guys who may or may not be going. One guy we know who is not playing, though, on Thursday night is Patriots center Brian Stork. He suffered a concussion, one potentially so severe that it has landed him on the injured reserve recall list, which means it will be mid-season until he comes back.
Jeez.
I think it's a smart move because when you take a guy who's had a concussion and you haven't used your IR recall on anybody else, that allows you to stash this guy away, and you have no option of bringing him back before he's ready because you can't rush him back. He's on recall. There are rules.
Right.
He can't rush himself back. He's on recall. There are rules. So at the very least, this does give him what should be ample enough time to recover from this concussion. So I think it's a good way of just taking him playing too soon, completely out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally get that. But that also means now that not only are we down Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, and of course Steelers center Marquise Pouncey for the Steelers, we are also out LeGarrette Blount for the Patriots, and now the Patriots starting center as well.
Yeah, a lot of people missing for this first one.
A lot of guys missing for this first one, but not going to make it any less of a compelling matchup given, of course, the history between the Patriots and the Steelers.
Sure.
The way the summer has gone involving the Patriots and the Steelers, the fact that it's NFL football and everybody's going to watch regardless of the teams that are
mm-hmm.
playing. And, you know, it's football, essentially.
Well, it's a combination of being the first game and two storied teams.
Two storied teams with large fan bases.
And
a lot of people want to put their eyes on them this year.
Yeah.
Got a new Steelers defense, all of that fun
kinda
stuff.
Kind of hard to argue this is one of the bigger matchups of the week.
That's true. Speaking of matchups of this week, we're going to take a break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and then it's our return of Minute Picks, which is, of course, where we spend approximately a minute, sometimes up to 2 minutes, discussing each of the week's scheduled games in the National Football League and make, of course, our picks for the winners. So stay tuned. We'll be right back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. We're back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and it's time for Week 1 Minute Picks.
Minute Picks.
16 games, approximately 16 minutes to maybe 32 minutes Let's go. let's start, of course, on Thursday night with the Pittsburgh Steelers traveling to Foxborough to take on the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. I am going with the Patriots to win this game. I have watched all five of the Pittsburgh Steelers preseason games, and I don't think things are going to go so well for the Steelers on defense this year. They're doing some cover two stuff, ill-advisedly, I would say, to the point where Shamarco Thomas, the guy who was supposed to be starting in place of Troy Polamalu, has been benched for 32-year-old veteran Will Allen, who has started only 11 games for the Steelers in his career. I think both offenses, the Steelers are going to be without Le'Veon Bell. They're not going to have Martavis Bryant. New England's got a whole bunch of no-name receivers plus Rob Gronkowski. I think that both offenses could have some good opportunities here, but ultimately, I think the Steelers' defense is going to sink them in this game. I'm going Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, the primetime national coverage, Brady's revenge. And
Bradening.
Love him or hate him, you gotta admit that this is a situation that sets up where he's gonna play with a chip on his shoulder, and I'd say deservedly so. I think that combined with some of the key offensive pieces that Pittsburgh's missing with Le'Veon and Martavis, plus, as you mentioned, some of the defensive struggles we'll call it the defensive transition struggles.
Yes.
That the Pittsburgh Steelers have experienced this early the preseason. I think this sets up for a high scoring shootout situation, but I think that the Patriots are going to get it done.
Moving on to Sunday, first with the early games, the Green Bay Packers are at the Chicago Bears. Talk about defenses in transition. The Chicago Bears go into a 3-4 base this year for the first time in franchise history. How that's going to go, I don't know.
That's like blasphemy.
I do like me some Pernell McPhee, though, so I will say that. Alshon Jeffrey, wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey's banged up. Rookie Kevin White might not even play this year. There are questions, of course, with the Chicago offensive line, as there always are. Green Bay isn't a perfect team. They've had injuries of their own, offensive line questions, defensive questions of their own. But you got Aaron Rodgers, and that kind of makes up for a lot of sins. And you got Jay Cutler, and that kind of amplifies some of those sins. So I'm going to go with the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, there's just too much going on for the Bears here. There's new coaches. They're changing, new defense for the first time in whatever. And, they had all the issues that they had last year, which got them to have a new coach and all that stuff. And, now they're going to play a rival. And, obviously probably the best quarterback right now. Jordy Nelson. I mean, it's still Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, they're going to have they've got some defensive issues that they need to work out, like most years. But regardless, I just don't see how the Bears can overcome this.
Next up, the Kansas City Chiefs are at the Houston Texans. To me, this is a matchup of defenses because you look at the quarterback situation. Alex Smith, the Kansas City Chiefs, he's not lighting anything up. Brian Hoyer for the Houston Texans, he's not lighting anything
up. Nobody scares you.
Nobody's scared of either of these quarterbacks. What is scary, of course, what are scary are the defenses. And for Kansas City, Jamaal Charles. Houston Texans, of course, without Arian Foster for a while with the groin surgery. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans here just because I like their defense that much more. J.J. Watt, of course. Jadeveon Clowney, he's going to return, play a little sparingly, but he's up there. I think both defenses are going to look strong in this game. I think Jamaal Charles is going to look okay in this game, considering the defense that he's up against. But you stack up defense versus defense, and then you go with Houston being the home team, so I'm going with the Texans.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, these teams match up pretty well in that they're strong on defense and less so on quarterback. I think you give maybe an edge to the running game to Kansas City
but at the same time he's running into that Texans,
but you give the edge
defensive front
you
anyway.
You get the edge in defense to Houston here, even though Kansas City's got a really good defense. I think Houston has the outstanding playmakers, and we're going to see Clowney back for the first time in forever, so we'll see what that looks like. But I like the Texans at home here.
Next game, early game, Cleveland Browns at the New York Jets. Cleveland Browns, they got one of the better, if not one of the best, if not the best, secondaries in the NFL. New York Jets, They've got Ryan Fitzpatrick under center right now. So I like the way that that shakes up out for Cleveland. But until this Cleveland defense can prove that they know how to stop the run, I'm a little bit nervous about this game. New York's got a lot of running backs that they're going to be leaning heavily on this year. And this is going to be the first real test of whether this Cleveland run defense featuring Danny Shelton is any better. I think that's going to be a little bit of growing pains here for the Cleveland defensive front. I'm going to go with the New York Jets.
Yeah, this one's been really tough for me. Just I can see this going a lot of different ways. Now that Fitzpatrick has taken hold of the quarterback situation and for the Jets, I think that that probably can. He's at least a veteran who's had some success in the league and been able to operate an offense, and you know, they got a solid running back in Ivory, and their defense is certainly tough. The Browns, I don't know what to expect. They won a lot of games last year that I didn't expect them to win, and I think because of that, and the fact that that the Jets have a new coach in Todd Bowles, and there's just a lot of things they're still getting sorted out. I'm gonna go with the Browns here in a road upset, just for the, like I said. They won a lot of games I didn't expect them to last year, so I think that this might be a one that they can pull out.
Next, the Indianapolis Colts are at the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills be starting quarterback Tyrod Taylor. Of course, they've got LeSean McCoy at running back, not 100% healed from that hamstring injury, but expected to play, especially since they moved on rather unexpectedly from Fred Jackson. Indianapolis Colts, you know, Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
What more can you say? They also bring on Andre Johnson, and then, of course, running back Frank Gore, who will be on a pitch count for this game. I like that Buffalo Bills defense. You got, you know, I like their aggression up front. I like their ability to stop the run. You know, I think that they're going to cause some problems for Indianapolis. You know, there's a lot of things that are kind of unexpected about that Buffalo offense as well. And you got the Bills as a home team, but it's week one. I'm not ready to count out Andrew Luck to the point where they're going into Buffalo and can't win this game. I'm going Colts.
Yeah, God, this one's really tough to pick too, and for a lot of the reasons you said, the stoutness that D in Buffalo and Rex Ryan taking over, and you know, we'll see what he can do. The Colts, they still have. It seems like for the last couple of years they've had the same questions. You know, can they get a running game going? Can their defense play better?
Can their offensive line hold up?
Can their offensive line hold up? All these things continue to be asked, and they keep getting better and better. And really the only constant there is Luck. And I think that I don't know. I have to pick somebody, so I'm gonna go with that guy just because he regardless of where they play, he just knows how to win games. All he does is win.
All he does is win.
I didn't mean that. It just came out.
Yes. Next game on the early game slate for Sunday, Miami Dolphins at Washington. There's not much I like about Washington this year, so sue me. I don't like that Kirk Cousins is the quarterback over RG3. I don't think it matters who the quarterback is there, though. I don't think that situation's going to be kind to any of these guys under center. You know, I like Alfred Morris as a running back. You know, Pierre Garçon, he's a pretty good, you know, he's a pretty good wide receiver, but I don't trust the O-line. I don't trust that defense. I like Miami's offense a lot better than Washington's. I like Miami's defense a lot more than Washington's. I'm picking the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a no-brainer if it was in Miami, just because you know, the Dolphins are a team that looks like they should be, you know,
making a leap forward,
pretty
this
good
year.
This year, taking that step forward, and Washington is circling the bowl, if you will. You know, I don't know. There's something about Washington and you know, it's at home and you know, they still have good players like Alfred Morris and you know, Ryan Kerrigan and things like that. You know, I don't know. This one's really tough for me to call. I guess I'll give it to Miami just because I do think they are a better team and Washington is somewhat of a mess right now. But I certainly wouldn't be surprised if Washington somehow pulls this game out and stuns everybody that's really in Miami's corner right now. But I'll officially go with Miami.
Next up, Carolina Panthers at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville is a team to me that I think is going to show improvement on the field and in the win-loss column this year. But until and unless that offensive line improves, and I haven't seen it yet because it's not the regular season yet. We're talking about an offensive line that gave up 71 sacks last year, 55 on Blake Bortles alone. You know, they've got some good running backs there, but if the offensive line isn't in place, they can't run the ball. Blake Bortles, I'm excited about what he's going to be able to do with Allen Robinson if he can get the ball out of his hands before he gets sacked. And, you know, Carolina, they're lacking for wide receivers, as we all know, but they do have a really strong defense, particularly up front. And so for that reason, I'm going to go with Carolina, but, you know, that's only based on my trepidation about Jacksonville's offensive line more than anything.
Well, I'll tell you why I have trepidation about Jacksonville in general, and that's because every year for the past few years,
we have said it's
going
to happen.
I come into the season and I say, man, I think this could be Jacksonville's year. I think that they could make a step this year. But I'll tell you what, I'm not going to let it phase me. I'm going to go ahead and pick Jacksonville here. I like them at home. I like a lot of things that they've done in the offseason. I hope I'm not jinxing them. I'm not terribly afraid of Carolina, especially right now. You know, they're a little bit limited in what they can do
on offense.
Sure. And I think that while that I think that front seven is I think the linebackers are still tough for Carolina. I think their defensive line is going through a little bit of a change, and I think their secondary is maybe not quite as good as it was a couple years ago. And I think
I got to keep an eye on Star Latulele's foot too, by the way.
So I don't know. I'm gonna go with the home team, and I'm not gonna worry about the history of Jacksonville and all that. I'm gonna say that I like what they have going on, and I'm gonna go ahead and think that they get it done this year finally for me. At least in this game.
The final early game on Sunday, the Seattle Seahawks are at the St. Louis Rams. I don't like anything about St. Louis's offense in particular right now. I'm just not feeling it. Now, the defense, on the other hand, they're stacked, particularly up front, and I think that's the only way that St. Louis will be able to pull off this win against such a brutal team in terms of passing offense. You got Jimmy Graham. In terms of rushing offense, you got Marshawn Lynch. In terms of defense, both in the front seven and in the secondary, the only way that St. Louis, I think, can stay in this game is if they can really limit that offense and keep it close and you know, kind of pull out a 1 point or 3 point win in a single digit kind of scoring situation. But I just don't see that happening. I mean, it's week one, so I'm just going to go with what I know, go with some tendencies right now before we actually have stuff we can analyze about these teams. Seattle it is.
Yeah, see here, I don't, man. It's like you said, that front seven is kind of ridiculous.
It's kind of ridiculous.
St. Louis. I hear you on the offense. It's tough to buy the offense. They got a new quarterback. They got, we'll see in Todd Gurley, you know, we'll see what they have in that. Can they get that done, especially against that good Seattle defense? It's really tough to say, but I know that the Rams always play Seattle tough. And
correct.
I think I'm going to pull the trigger on the Rams upset in week one here, and I'm not sure exactly why, other than I think
they play Seattle tough.
They play Seattle tough, and maybe they'll catch them, you know, snoozing a little bit in the first week playing the last place team from last year, and on, you know, especially because it's in St. Louis. So I'm going to go ahead and pick that upset.
Now we got the late afternoon slate of games on Sunday, kicking off with the New Orleans Saints at the Arizona Cardinals. You know, Arizona, I think, could have a really good year, but again, the question marks on that offensive line still remain, and if Carson Palmer takes too many hits, you know, we saw last year he suffered that injury. But again, if he suffers an injury, I mean, they were able to win 11 games last year, even though they had so many quarterbacks on the field and so many guys get hurt, and they didn't have a run game. So, you know, I think I really like Arizona in this game. I think that New Orleans isn't going to be as bad as they were last year. I think that they're going to make some important steps forward, particularly on defense, because there's not a lot of step forwarding you can make when you're the top offense in the league in 2014. Mm-hmm. You can kind of only make a step back, you know, losing Jimmy Graham, for example. I'm going to go with Arizona, but I wouldn't be surprised if New Orleans ended up winning instead.
I wouldn't be surprised if either of these teams win.
Correct.
You know, I agree with that. I don't really know what to expect out of New Orleans. I need to see a game or two before I get any sort of handle on what I'm going to at least have, what kind of opinion I'm going to have of them this year. I feel like they're trying to transition out of Drew Brees, and he's still there, and what does that mean? I don't know. And what happened to that defense last year? Can they be better? With Arizona, they have questions. Certainly, there are a lot of the same questions they had last year. They have a different defensive coordinator, but they have a lot of the same defensive players, even though they switched a couple guys out. This being in Arizona, I'm gonna take the Arians factor here and say that they win this game because of I don't know, they're good coaching and they're at home, I guess.
Okay, thanks. Okay, there we go. Spit it out. next up, the Detroit Lions are at the San Diego Chargers. You know, Melvin Gordon, the big pickup there, the running back for San Diego, got Phillip Rivers locked down. He's going to stick around till the end of his career, essentially, with his contract extension. Detroit Lions, their defense doesn't have Ndamukong Suh, no more Nick Fairley. They do add, of course, Haloti Ngata in the middle, and the addition of running back Amir Abdullah has a lot of people buzzing. I'm going to go with Detroit to win this game. I think that Detroit can do enough defensive disruption even without Fairley and Sue in that lineup against San Diego's offensive line. And I just like what Detroit has put together on offense a little bit more than San Diego's.
Yeah, this one's tough because I feel like a homer if I think that the Lions are going to win. and plus it's the Lions on the road, and that's something I'm old enough to know that just is not – it's far from automatic. It's not necessarily going to happen. I think the Lions are going to look exciting. I think that I'm expecting Calvin Johnson to have a little bit bounce back year. I think he's kind of flying under the radar, and nobody's talking about him anymore. And, yeah, he's 30-plus, but he's also kind of a freak, and I think he can still play. And I think he's going to bounce back. I think the Abdullah is going to be electric or look electric, or at least have, you know, signs of it anyway. But I'm going to pick against the Lions just because they're on the road on the West Coast. I think that's a tough spot, and it's not an easy team to play.
Next, Tennessee Titans at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That, of course, means, though not directly, Marcus Mariota versus Jameis Winston.
Yeah, they should just put them out there, the two of them, and see what
just
happens.
Just have them duel. It's probably going to be better than whatever this game ends up looking like. I'm sorry, but I don't have any belief in anything that's going on with either of these teams offensively or defensively. I will give the defensive edge to Tampa Bay. They do have guys like Gerald McCoy. You know, Tennessee doesn't really have a lot of that. They have Dick LeBeau, but Dick LeBeau's not out there playing football for these guys. You know, you got these – that's the only interesting thing, honestly, about this game is that we're going to see the two rookie quarterbacks in the same game, obviously not on the field at the same time, so it doesn't even really matter. I don't like either of these teams. I'm going with Tampa Bay. They're the home team. Sorry. I'm sorry, Titans and Bucks fans. I'm sorry.
You don't have to apologize. That's just how you feel. You
know, but I feel bad.
I
feel like I'm being mean.
It's just one of those games that, you know, both these teams have been through some rough stretches, and I think this is mostly interesting, like you said, for the two rookie quarterbacks to see how they play and how they fare, basically. But I think it's I like Tampa, and it's mostly because they're at home, but it's also because I think they, like you said, they have McCoy, but they also have Levante David. I just feel like they have more players on that team, and I'm just not feeling a whole lot in Tennessee right now. Of course, last year I picked against Tennessee in the first week, and they beat the Chiefs somehow. So who knows? But I'll go ahead and take Tampa here.
Next, the Cincinnati Bengals travel to Oakland to take on the Raiders. This game makes me want to pull that upset card and have the Raiders win this game so bad. Like, if the Raiders' defensive front is
that night,
if that's the kind of defense that they have. Yeah, and if it was at night, for sure. But if that's the kind of defense they have, Andy Dalton is, you know, no quarterback in the NFL is going to be highly accurate while under pressure. But Andy Dalton has a certain special brand of inaccuracy when under pressure that could come to play here. You know, and they're traveling, you know, for their opener.
West Coast. Go
to the West Coast. You know, but he does have a very good offensive line protecting him. He does have a lot of weapons. Tyler Eifert, the tight end, is back, along with A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, and so on. And they're highly optimistic about their defense this year. Only 20 sacks last year, but Geno Atkins is 100% healthy and back to his old ways. I'm going Cincinnati, but my gut says the Raiders.
I'm going there.
My gut says the Raiders hard.
I'm going there, and I fully expect this to be – like if the Jaguars win, like I'm predicting, then this will be this year's Jaguars for me, where I'm expecting them to like take a step forward, and then they just still kind of look the same. But no, I like a lot of what they've done. And
yeah, I like a lot of what they've done.
I think that there's a lot of good things going on out there. I think that I'm not a big fan of Del Rio, but I think he's a coaching upgrade at this point, mm-hmm. and especially for the defense and getting that defense together. Plus, they got Mac back. Plus, they got Charles Woodson again, which, yeah, he's old as hell, but, like, you know, he can still play. And if nothing else, that's like having a defensive coach on the field with
Absolutely.
These guys, a defensive coach that can still play. And I think that'll help the younger guys and all that stuff. I just feel some good stuff here, definitely with Cooper and Derek Carr showed that he had a lot of promise last year. I think it just sets up well for them because they're at home, playing the Cincinnati team, who I could easily see sleeping in as they walk into this game,
right.
and Raiders catch them by surprise.
The final late afternoon game for Week 1 Sunday is the Baltimore Ravens at the Denver Broncos.
This should be a good one.
This should be a good one. These two teams always kind of bring it anymore in the Peyton Manning era, at least. So I'm very much looking forward to this. This thing screams shootout to me. Even though both teams have pretty good defenses up front, secondaries I have question marks. You know, Baltimore kind of lacking for playmakers right now. Rookie wide receiver Breshad Perriman is going to be out for still a little while longer with his knee injury. So you got guys like Kamar Aiken and Marlon Brown kind of stepping up alongside Steve Smith. But I also really like this Justin Forsett situation when it comes to Mark Trestman. I think it's awesome. Obviously, on the Denver side, Peyton Manning not really running this offense right now because it's Gary Kubiak's and it's not Peyton Manning's typical style of offense, but he'll execute it. He's not a big baby. I think Baltimore can go into Denver and win this game. I am going to go with the Ravens.
Mm, yeah.
I think so. I think that this team is capable of doing this, and I think Ravens are going to send an interesting message this season. Don't sleep on the Ravens.
No, I think the Ravens are it's another team that nobody's really talking about, but
yeah.
I think they could really have a solid squad this year and really make some noise. For this particular game, again, I like a lot of which I wasn't, you know, really banking on Perriman to do much this year anyway, especially not the first game, and so he's not in there. But you know, they still got Steve Smith. I think that they got some tight ends that they like. You keep telling me about
Crockett Gilmore and Max Williams.
Well, I know about Max Williams. Crockett Gilmore, I haven't heard too much about except for you, but they certainly sound like they seem to like him. But Forsett, definitely, I can see good things for him this year. And you know that defense is always going to be solid.
Yeah. I mean, keep an eye on Timmy Jernigan and his knee situation. That's not something they need right now.
I kind of feel like the Broncos might take even a slight step back this year. I'm not sure what to expect out of them. They still have a lot of talent on the team, especially on the defensive side of the ball that you think about the Broncos anymore, and you think about Peyton Manning in his
Thomas.
In his elder years, and Demaryius Thomas and the offensive weapons.
Anderson.
But then, you know, that defense has a lot of guys on there. So I think this one could go either way. I've called a lot of upsets, so I'm gonna call a lot of road wins here. So I'm gonna go with the Broncos because they're at home.
Sunday Night Football. Classic NFC East matchup, New York Giants at the Dallas Cowboys. Spoiler alert, I have the Dallas Cowboys as of right now, September, as of right now, going to the Super Bowl this year and winning it.
Wow.
The New York Giants, you know, things could get a little bit better for them on offense. We're not going to be seeing any Victor Cruz right now. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., kind of the point man there. You know, a lot of people think that there should be some expectations tempering about Mr. Beckham Jr. this year. You know, I'm kind of curious about their run game. I'm curious about that defense. All of it right now, I don't know how the New York Giants can be better than they were last year. And Dallas is still a very good team. And I'm going with the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just feel like this is the better team at home under the spotlight.
Yes.
And you know, the first Sunday Night Football, Owl and Chris. And, yeah, I think it's just a tough matchup for the Giants right out of the gate. I think that they're a team that's still trying to figure some things out where with – notwithstanding, the Cowboys are trying to figure out their running back situation right
yes.
now.
Yeah, it looks like Darren McFadden is going to be the starter for week one.
Outside of that situation, I think the Cowboys kind of know who they are, and the Giants are trying to figure it out. So
yes.
I'm going with the Cowboys.
And finally, the first of two Monday night games. This is a really good Monday night doubleheader, in my opinion. Starting with, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia Eagles at Atlanta Falcons. I fully expect the Atlanta Falcons to have a bounce back this year. The Kyle Shanahan offense really suits Matt Ryan and company. You know, bringing in Dan Quinn to be the head coach is going to revitalize, you know, put that defense on the revitalization process. And given the state of most of the teams, if, you know, Saints TBD in the NFC South, I think this is a good year for Atlanta to win that division. Philadelphia, of course, fast-moving, high-paced Chip Kelly offense. Got Sam Bradford under center. He looked good in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Looked unstoppable in the preseason. This is going to be a fun game to watch. And part of me, I'm going to go with the Falcons. I'm going with the home team in their home dome. But this is going to be a who scores first, who scores early, who scores often, who scores last. And because the Eagles run so many plays, that could be them. But I'm going to go with the Falcons.
Yeah.
Okay. It took the whole minute.
No, that's okay. This is damn near impossible game to call.
Oh, just it's so tough.
Atlanta's got
so
much new stuff going on with the new coaching staff, and they're trying to get, you know, Dan Quinn's trying to put his fingerprints on the defense and get everything turned around. They're trying to get that offense back to where it was a couple years ago, but with different pieces and whatnot. I'm with you. I think Atlanta should have a better year than they had last year. This really comes down to, what did Chip Kelly do? You know, what did he do this offseason? And is this guy, this crazy guy that everybody likes to talk about, how mad scientist in the lab throwing parts up in the air and all that and putting together this, you know, crazy robot football thing?
This guy in Cutthroat Kitchen looks like Mike Pettin. Okay.
But that's the thing, is it going to work? All this stuff that he's doing, is it going to work? Is he the genius that I think people think he might be, or people are going to argue about whether he is or not? And I think this game is a really good showcase for it because it's right out of the gate. It's against a tough opponent on the road. To hell with it. I'm going to go with the Eagles. I've picked too many road games, but whatever.
I love picking road teams. I'm not afraid.
I'm going to go with the Eagles here, and it's not even really because I think they're going to win. It's more like I'm fascinated to see what they do.
And finally.
I think they could, certainly, but anyway.
And finally. The Minnesota Vikings are at the San Francisco 49ers in the Monday night late game. I'm going with the Minnesota Vikings here. I love Teddy Bridgewater, especially the second half of his rookie season. His accuracy is just phenomenal. He's got a lot of weapons to work with. Love me some Charles Johnson. Adrian Peterson is back. That defense, as crafted by Mike Zimmer, isn't just tough up front. It's tough in the secondary. San Francisco 49ers, a lot of player losses. We know about that. You know, I don't entirely trust Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback. No more Frank Gore there to kind of bail him out. You add Torrey Smith, but are you going to get the ball to him? And what is that going to accomplish in San Francisco as compared to in Baltimore? This is just Minnesota going on the road. They're going to get this one. Vikings.
This is a fascinating game for so many different reasons than most of the rest.
Yes.
And you named a bunch of reasons that I agree with as far as why I think Minnesota is going to win. And it's why I think that they're going to be a pretty good team this year. And I think a lot of people are on board with that. They showed us reason to believe that last year. Like you said, they got AP back and all that. So there's plenty of reasons to feel optimistic about Minnesota, and there's more reasons to feel pessimistic about the Niners. And, you know, with this, one of the big stories of the offseason was this weird Tom Sula that ended up taking over.
Right.
And his just his quirkiness. And, you know, what's that going to be like in a game? Are we going to see some weird decisions being made? Or, you know, I'm curious to see how they get out of, or how they try to come out of everything that they've dealt with in the last, you know, 10 months or whatever. So definitely a fascinating game. I don't expect much out of San Francisco in general this year, much less in this game. Even though they're at home and it's a night game and all that stuff, and I typically go with the home teams in those situations, I'm going with Minnesota here. But this should be very interesting to watch.
And that wraps it up for our week one minute picks here, the F-Ball NFL podcast. Yeah, tough slate.
Tough slate because a lot of it's the first week, and you learn a lot by the second week. You know, the second through third, fourth, and all that, you kind of have, you know, you feel at least for the early section of the season and all that stuff. But every year, the first week, there's a handful of games that go completely different from what you're expecting. And so I'm interested to see where that is. But this is one where a lot of the teams that a lot of people are down on are at home playing teams that are either okay or pretty good.
Right.
And so then it's just like, you know, I mean, we all know the NFL well enough. It's tough to win on the road, regardless of how good your team is, or how bad the team you're playing is. It's just a tough thing to do to win on the road. And but it's the first week, and what's that mean?
Right. Because it takes a good 3, 4, maybe 5 weeks till we can kind of understand what any given team's identity is for the season. So.
But we'll have a lot better idea about a number of teams after just one week. You know what I mean? Because there'll be teams that you're just like, man, I didn't see that at all, and maybe I should have. You know what I mean? How did I miss that? Or that came out of nowhere. I don't know why they're playing this good or bad.
Yeah. I always give it 4 weeks, and then I know what's going
on.
No,
I'm saying, like, that's when you get a good feel for the whole season. But, like, you know what I'm saying. Anyway,
that wraps up our minute picks for week one. As we say every time we do this, do with them what you do with them what you will.
Whatever you wish.
Whatever you wish. We're not advocating or suggesting anything.
If you choose to do so.
And we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL podcast, and we'll send you on out of here because I know we got some football to watch.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. And that wraps things up here at the F-Ball NFL podcast for this week. I, of course, am your host, Andrea Hengst. You can find my work covering the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns at BleacherReport.com, covering the Cleveland Browns, particularly their salary cap, and also a little bit of AFC North for Scout.com and their Orange and Brown report. That is at CLE.Scout.com. I also cover the entire National Football League at SportsOnEarth.com. And thesportsdaily.com. You can also find me on Twitter at @FBall_Andrea, @FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian. I'm the co-host of this podcast, as well as the senior executive producer of the podcast.
Oh, we're back to that again.
I decided to give myself a bump from last week. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Well, everybody, we've waited long. And
yes.
Impatiently.
It's here. It is upon us.
But it's here. It is upon us. It is football season again. Games, of course, kicking off on Thursday night and a full slate on Sunday and Sunday night and 2 games on Monday night. So we got a lot of football to watch. Everybody enjoy the games. We'll be back next Wednesday, of course, with week 2 minute picks and covering all the news that we need to know about in the National Football League here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Enjoy the games, folks. You earned them. Peace.
Later.